This is the story. Stories of people, of nations, of the world, of yesterday and today, and the meaning they hold for tomorrow.
Now, I'm an ordinary guy. Any American you want to name. The fact that I'm a radio announcer doesn't matter for the moment. I've got a story I want you to hear. A story that I think is important to both of us. To you overseas and to me on the home front. Here's why I think it's important. Here are my reasons. Now, you know that in the United States, you can walk to the corner newspaper stand and take your own choice of various newspapers. You know, too, they're likely to disagree with each other in their views, and some of them are likely to disagree with the administration in power. We take that for granted. Still, you don't get arrested for buying the paper you want, and no publisher gets arrested for printing it. Even in the midst of a tough war, we allow so much freedom of criticism that sometimes it worries people from other countries. But we know it's our strength. Better allow this freedom, better even have it abused at times, than to let one group of people decide what's to be printed and what we should think. We've seen where that can land, in Germany and Japan. Now, this particular freedom wasn't won in America without some pretty hard fights, and that's what our story is about today. This is the story of one of the most crucial and important of those struggles.
The Freedom of the Press. With Raymond Edward Johnson as Andrew Hamilton. On the village green in Eastchester, near New York City, an election is held. A printer, John Peter Zenger, publishes the truth about the election. He keeps on publishing the truth. The authorities don't like it. They clamp him in jail. There is the beginning of a battle. A long battle that won for America freedom of the press. For in the words of Governor Morris,
Andrew Hamilton's defense of Zenger in 1735 was the germ of American freedom, the morning star of that liberty which later revolutionized America.
It was good of you to accept this case, Mr. Hamilton.
In view of the fact that I'd retired from practice, and that's this infernal gout.
Others were closed. It was good of you to accept this case, Mr. Hamilton.
In view of the fact that I'd retired from practice, and that's this infernal gout. However, there's a saying that when a neighbor's house is on fire, we must look to our own. Certainly the fact that you and Smith were disbarred for taking the case of this man, Zenger, is enough to whip every advocate in the colonies into action.
I found differently, Mr. Hamilton. Yours was the only door that opened to us. The others were closed by the influence of Governor Cosby.
I understand that Zenger is being represented by Counselor Chambers.
Oh, Cosby's man.
And the justices, Delancey and Phillips?
Cosby's.
And I dare say the jury has been well intimidated to make it a pretty thorough travesty on justice.
The jury has been instructed to find a verdict agreeable with the opinions of the court.
What a farce. Pretty a mess of legal mud has ever smeared a court. Oh, we're almost there. Give me the details quickly.
Well, when Governor Cosby took office in 1732, he immediately dismissed the People's Court and established his own. With the law in his own pocket, he was able to cheat, swindle, and rob at leisure. We lawyers banded together against him and financed Peter Zenger's newspaper.
Aye.
We wrote articles. Now, here's one quoted in the indictment which had the whole city of New York laughing at Cosby. Listen. We see men's deeds destroyed, judges arbitrarily displaced, New courts erected,
without consent of the legislature,
by which it seems
to me the trials by jury are taken away when the governor pleases. Men of known estate denied their votes and altogether put upon and tyrannized. Aye, friends, that's a tidy bit. But there's more yet. Listen. Removing to New Jersey as a means of escaping these complaints would be leaping from the frying pan into the fire. For both provinces,
the people of the city of New York think, as matters now stand, that their liberties and properties are precarious, and that slavery is like to be forced upon them and their posterity if past injustices are not corrected and future injustices avoided.
Hear, hear!
Let Governor Cosby swallow that as easily as he swallowed up our freedom. Here's more stuff to choke our esteemed governor. A supreme governmental authority injures the whole of his people if he evades or suffers the law to be evaded. In such a suppression and evasion, that supreme authority does attack the government and bring in an arbitrary power and is an enemy and a traitor to his country.
Right, that's totally right.
By His Excellency William Cosby, Captain General and Governor in Chief of the Province of New York, a proclamation. Whereas, for the contrivance of some evil persons in the printed newspaper entitled the New York Weekly Journal, containing the freshest advices, foreign and domestic, have been caused to print and publish divers scandalous, virulent, false, and seditious reflection upon His Majesty's government by John Peter Zenger as printer, this proclamation is issued, promising a reward of £50 to such persons as shall discover the author or
reward.
Authors.
Proclamation. By my blood, Delancey, what good are these rewards and proclamations? No one claims the first or listens to the latter.
I beg you, sir, be patient. Soon we will act against Zenger.
God save the king.
God save me from stupid blunderers like you, Delancey. I told you a month ago to arrest Zenger.
Man is innocent. He has merely printed these things. It was not his hand that penned them.
No, but by heaven, if Zenger is jailed, there'll be no one to publish these outrageous stories. I want Zenger thrown into the deepest, darkest dungeon
Zenger.
In the city.
You're under arrest for treason by order of the governor.
I want his presses broken up and thrown into the Hudson. Tear his place apart.
His lawyers, James Alexander and William Smith.
Disbar them. Keep them away from Zenger
James
at any
Alexander
price.
Alexander and William Smith, for having signed exceptions in the name of John Peter Zenger, are excluded from any further practice in this court, and their names are struck out off the rolls of attorneys of this court. Signed, the Honorable James Delancey, Chief Justice.
Well, that's the complete story, Mr. Hamilton. Zenger was kept in jail for 6 months without being allowed to consult the law. However, I've prepared this brief for you. Ah, here, we're stopping.
Aye. And there's a goodly crowd about. I can see that the people realize the importance of this trial.
Oh, they do. Zenger wrote articles on the subject during his imprisonment and smuggled them out to his wife, who printed them.
Ah, that's a grand thing. Open the door to me, Mr. Alexander. And, mind my foot. Here you are.
Hey, look.
Hamilton. It's Hamilton. And I've come to defend Peter Zenger.
Process of the law against him, the said John Peter Zenger.
Well, the trial has already begun.
Which
of the Whigs is the so-called defense attorney chambers?
All in the premises, etc.
That's he over there.
To this information, the defendant has pleaded not guilty, and we are ready to prove it.
Will the counsel for the defense answer?
He's going to answer the information.
May it please your honors, a great allowance should be made for what men speak or write.
Mm-hmm.
In all libels, there must be some person so clearly pointed out that no doubt remains as to who is meant.
There speaks Cosby himself.
I am in the hopes that the prosecuting attorney will fail in his proof as to this point.
Bah!
Who is that? Come before the court.
I? With the greatest of pleasure.
Did you wish to address the court, Mr. Hamilton?
May it please your honors, I'm concerned in this cause on the part of Mr. Zanger, the defendant, and I do...
You cannot interest yourself in the cause here being reviewed without the consent of the defendant. Mr. Zanger has already engaged Mr. Chambers as advocate.
Sirs, I'm of the opinion that Mr. Zanger will offer no objection to my interest when I say that I came here from Philadelphia at the request of James Alexander. No objection, I presume? Then I can proceed. I do for my client confess and admit that he both printed and published the two newspapers set forth in the charges.
Oh. Did the court clerk enter that admission?
Yes, Your Honors.
Then, if Your Honor pleases, since Mr. Hamilton has admitted the guilt of his client in printing and publishing these libels, I think the jury must be directed to find a verdict for the king.
Not so, Mr. Attorney. There are two sides to that bargain. I have pleaded guilty to the publishing and printing. I plead not guilty to the charge of libel. The mere publishing and printing of a paper does not make libel. You have to do more in order to prove your case. You must prove that the statements printed were libelous. That is, false, seditious, and scandalous as charged.
If these statements in these papers are not libels, I don't know what a libel is. Listen. Trials by jury are taken. Men of known estate denied their votes and altogether put upon and tyrannized. And here is more. That supreme authority does attack the government and bring in an arbitrary power and is an enemy and traitor to his country. The government of His Excellency is too sacred to be subjected to these gross libels.
May it please your honors, I'm ready to affirm that the government is a sacred thing. But I differ from the attorney when he insinuates that the just complaints of a number of men suffering from misrule are a libel against the offending government. Had I believed that to be the law, I should not have given the court the trouble of hearing anything I might say in this cause.
The case before the court is whether Mr. Zenger is guilty of libeling His Excellency the Governor of New York and indeed the whole administration of the government. Mr. Hamilton has confessed the printing and the publishing, and I think the words used are plainly scandalous and seditious. Tyranny, arbitrary power, enemy, traitor. And if such papers are not libel, I think it may be said that there is no such thing as libel.
I cannot agree with Mr. Attorney, for although I freely admit the existence of such a thing as libel, I insist that my client has committed none. I noticed just now that Mr. Attorney, in defining libel, made use of the words scandalous and seditious. But whether by design or oversight, he omitted the word false.
I don't think I omitted the word false. But regardless of that, a libel is a libel, whether true or not.
Again, I must differ with Mr. Attorney. The information to which we have pleaded not guilty is the printing of a certain false, malicious, seditious, and scandalous libel. The word false must have some meaning, or else how came it there? I hope Mr. Attorney will not say he put it there by chance, because I intend to prove that without the word false, this cause is not valid.
May it...
Continue. It is a falsehood that makes a scandal, and both together make the libel. To show the court that I am in good earnest and to save the court's time and Mr. Attorney's trouble, I will agree that if he can prove the words to be false, I'll admit them to be scandalous, seditious, and a libel. So the work seems to be somewhat shortened, and Mr. Attorney has only to prove the words false in order to make us guilty.
We have nothing. We have nothing to prove. You have confessed the printing and publishing. But if it were necessary to prove, and I insist it is not, how can we prove a negative?
I did not expect to hear in an experienced court of law that a negative cannot be proved. If a man is charged with murder and proves the victim to be alive and happy, he has proved a negative. However, we will save the attorney this trouble also. And we'll prove that those very papers that are called libels are true in every word.
You cannot be admitted, Mr. Hamilton, to give the truth of a libel in evidence. The libel cannot be justified, for it is a libel whether true or not.
I am sorry that the court has so soon decided the point. I had expected to be heard on the subject. I have not in all my life met with an authority which says we cannot give the truth in evidence during a libel cause.
The law is clear that you cannot justify a libel.
I know that. May it please your honor to be so. But we have a plain authority in the judgment on the case of John de Northampton in which it was said, et quia praedictus Johannes Cognovit dictam literam per se scriptam lobeto de pereus. Qui est consilio regis qua litera continet in se nullum veritate, etc. Now, sir, by this judgment it appears the libelous words were utterly false. Which made it a crime? The falsehood made the crime. And is that not what we contend in this case? Do not we insist that the falsehood makes the scandal and both make the libel? How can it be known whether Zenger's printing was libelous, that is false or true, unless we are allowed to prove them true, since the attorney will not undertake to prove them false? In the case of Fuller against the Crown, that great man, Lord Chief Justice Holt, laid down the rule that he who will take upon himself to write things, it lies upon him to prove them at his peril. Now, sir, we have acknowledged the printing and publishing of those papers set forth in the charges, and we are ready to prove them true at our peril.
There will be a short adjournment. Mr. Attorney, will you come to my chambers, please? Mr. Attorney, before adjournment of the court, you heard what Mr. Hamilton said concerning the validity of false or true statements as pertaining to libel. What do you say to it?
The law, in my opinion, is very clear. The defendant cannot be permitted to justify a libel. The matter seems very plain, and I submit it to judgment.
Mr. Hamilton, the court is of the opinion you ought not to be permitted to prove the truth of the statements called libelous.
May it please your honor.
Mr. Hamilton, the court have delivered their opinion. We expect you will use us with good manners. You are not to be permitted an argument against the opinion of the court.
With submission, sir, I have seen the practice in very great courts and never heard it on manners.
After the court have declared their opinion, it is not good manners to insist upon a point in which you've been overruled.
I will say no more at this time. It is easily seen that the court is against us in this point.
Sir, use the court with good manners, and you shall be allowed all the liberty you can reasonably desire.
I thank your honor. Then, gentlemen of the jury, it is to you we must now appeal. We are here to prove. You are honest and lawful men. The fact you have
Hamilton.
The liberty of giving evidence, I will, is the strongest evidence of guilt.
Mr. Hamilton!
So it follows that you 12 men must understand the words used in these newspapers to be false, or else we are not guilty of libel.
No, Mr. Hamilton, no! The jury must find that Zenger printed and published those papers and leave it to the court to decide whether they are libelous.
But, and it please your honor,
you know this procedure is common. It is in the nature of a special verdict where the jury may leave the matter of the law to the court.
I see. I know that the jury may do so, but I likewise know that they may do otherwise. 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 The judgment of the court renders juries useless. It is true that in times past it was a crime to speak truth, and many brave and worthy men suffered for so doing. Yet even in those bad times, a great and good man durst say what I hope will not be taken amiss of me to say in this place. To wit, the practice of information for libels is a sword in the hands of a wicked king and an errant coward to cut down and destroy the innocent.
Pray, Mr. Hamilton, have a care what you say. Don't go too far. I don't like the liberties you take. Oh.
All men agree that we are governed by the best of kings, and I cannot see the meaning of Mr. Attorney's caution. We know His Majesty's gracious intention towards his subjects. He desires no more than that his people in the colonies be kept to their duty and allegiance to the Crown of Great Britain. But will anyone say that this aim is affected by a governor's setting his people by the ears, plaguing and plundering the rich and poor alike,
the commission which governors bear deserves reverence and submission. But when a governor departs from duty and acts as though his were the powers and honors of a royal hand, the people must inquire into that power.
Another outburst of this unseemly disturbance, and I shall clear the court.
Sirs, power alone will not make a man beloved. And I have heard it said that the man who was neither good nor wise before his being made a governor never mended upon reaching that exalted rank, but generally has been observed to become worse. Oh. And the more such men consider themselves out of reach of that law, the more wicked and cruel they are. I wish I could say there are no illustrations of that this day. It must be agreed to by all men that while they keep within the bounds of truth, they should with safety speak and write their sentiments of the men in power, whose conduct affects the liberty or property of the people. Were this denied, the next step is slavery. Mr. Attorney has insisted that the government is a sacred thing. Still a more sacred thing. Every day I see men delving into... Every day I see the Bible. So we may... But must take care what he says of the governor. Gentlemen of the jury, the danger is great if we put too much credulity into this court. A proper confidence is commendable, but the verdict must be yours and not referred to the discretion of others. Much depends upon this. A loss of liberty to a generous mind is far more deadly than death. The man who loves his country prefers its liberty to all other considerations, knowing that without liberty, life is misery. The question before the court and before you, gentlemen of the jury, is not of small or private concern. It is not the cause of a poor printer, nor of New York alone, a printer, nor of New York alone, a printer, nor of New York alone, a printer, nor of New York. It is the cause of liberty. Your upright conduct and just verdict this day will entitle you to the love and esteem of your fellow citizens. And every man who prefers freedom to a life of slavery will bless and honor you as men who have baffled an attempt of tyranny and secured for us and our posterity that to which nature and the laws of our country have given us a right, the liberty both of exposing and opposing arbitrary power by speaking and writing truth.
Order! Quiet! Bailiff, get order in this court! Gentlemen of the jury, the great pains Mr. Hamilton has taken to show how little regard juries are to pay to the opinions of the judges is done, no doubt, with the design that you should take but little notice of what I say on this occasion. I shall therefore only observe to you that, as the deed is confessed, the only thing that can come before you is whether the act makes a libel. And that is a matter of law, which you may leave to the court. You may withdraw to consider your verdict.
Is the jury agreed upon a verdict?
We are.
Have you found John Peter Zenger guilty of printing and publishing the libels in the information mentioned?
We find the defendant, John Peter Zenger, not guilty.
Raymond Edward Johnson, whom you've just heard as Andrew Hamilton, recently finished a long run on Broadway as Thomas Jefferson, so he's well up on his civil liberties. Ray, I certainly did enjoy your performance in this story we've just heard.
Thank you very much. I liked the role.
I understand
the role.
I understand
the role.
I understand that the play was based on actual court records, Ray.
Yes, that's right. All the words have been preserved, and they're mighty important for us right now. Not just in a domestic way, but also in an international way.
Just what do you mean by that, Ray?
Well, we all know now that one of the first steps of a would-be dictator is to seize control of the press and radio. We saw it with Mussolini and Hitler, and we saw it in Japan. We saw it in Japan. We saw it in Japan. He sought in Geppetto's old country that he can whip the minds of his people into fanaticism and brutal aggression. There was a time when the press and radio seemed like domestic problems that every country had a right to settle in its own way. Many felt that if Hitler wanted to shackle the German press, it was Germany's worry and not ours. Well, we know now that it can't ever again be thought of as a purely internal matter. It's everybody's problem because it affects the peace of the world. I know that in the United States, people are beginning to talk a good deal now about worldwide freedom of news. And I'm sure many of you in the armed forces are talking about it, too. It's one of those things that we're pretty sure we ought to have, only we're not sure just how to get it. It's one thing to say we want freedom of news, that we want people everywhere to have access to the facts. But putting it into effect is quite a different matter. Well, certainly I don't know the answer, but I know many are trying to find it, and that's the first step. Here's another of those crucial problems in international relations that is going to call for an awful lot of hard thought and patient work. It's another of those problems we'll have to think through if we're to meet the challenge we face of making a world where peace is secure.
Thank you, Raymond Edward Johnson. Listening to the Freedom of the Press, another program in the important radio series, This is the Story, broadcast for men and women in the American Armed Forces in every congress for men and women in the American Armed Forces in every congress for men and women in the American Armed Forces. Tune in next week to This is the Story to This is the Story to This is the Story to. This is the Armed Forces Radio Service. Radio Service.